to the Culture Chat hosted by WorkExo. Our mission is to upgrade work. Find out more about our Workplace Genome Project at workexo.com. And now, over to our host for today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Culture Chat podcast. My name is Jamie Nodder. I'm with WorkExo, and I have to say I'm kind of excited because normally I would say I'm with my partner in crime, Charlie Judy. And today we have a special treat. Because our producer in the podcast, Maddie Grant, our third partner in WorkExo, is joining me in Charlie's place. So, Maddie, please say hi and introduce yourself and welcome to the podcast as a co-presenter on this one.
Yes, hello everyone. It's exciting to be on this side of the mic.
Yes. So today we are going to be talking with Benjamin Warsinski, who is with a company called Branded World. And this is about, I think, the third podcast we've had that in one form or another is looking at the relationship between brand and culture. And so I'm excited about that conversation. I have said before that I'm a bit of a brand skeptic. It's not that I don't believe that brand exists or that it's not important. I mean, I think it is. But I'm always nervous that we're trying to convince people that our brand is something rather than being something. So I hope we're going to get into that. I'm going to let Benjamin introduce himself right now, as a matter of fact. So please tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and then we will get into our big question.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show. My name is Benjamin Warsinski, and I'm a brand strategist. And my background is kind of wide-ranging. I started off in resort residential design and planning, moved over to strategic planning and consulting to the U.S. Air Force, and then transitioned again into brand strategy.
Cool. Actually, neither here nor there, but when Maddie and I wrote the book Humanize, our very first speaking engagement was with the Air Force and with their public affairs officers, actually.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so that way it was. Very cool.
I love working with the Air Force.
So let's introduce the big question here and then get right into the conversation. With the work you do, specifically this, you put forward this concept of unshakable brands, which I think is a really cool phrase, and I do want to learn more about that. And one of the pieces of an unshakable brand is culture, which for, I think, Maddie and I, our perspective, that makes sense because we think culture is really important. But I would love to hear really from your perspective, like what does it really mean to have an unshakable culture and how does that connect to the unshakable brand concept?
Yeah, no, this is a great question, and I've been thinking about it for a couple weeks now. And really, I think to start off, brands are, much more than marketing fluff. The statements like a vision and your mission, your brand promise, those statements should be taken as measurable and quantifiable statements to really kind of track and kind of check on how the brand is actually performing. Not just financially, but culturally and within the company and how, more importantly, their customers perceive the brand as well. So when I talk about brand, I like to start with the foundation or what I call the groundwork. And that consists of five elements, which are your vision, your brand promise, your mission, your core values, and your guiding principles. And that really kind of sets the tone and the direction for how a brand will evolve and grow and be shaped. And so where culture comes into play is, it can feel exclusive sometimes when you don't define your culture. When startups come to me and they have small teams of maybe 3 to 5 people and they've kind of just been doing their thing and growing, they don't really bother to stop and write down what they're doing or what their culture is or how they define their brand. They're just kind of doing the work and seeing some results. But when they try to go to scale, that's where they kind of have the problems. When they bring people in and the people don't really fit in with the culture, they can't really stop and see, okay, what's working, what's not working. And so I think it's more of a lack of communication from what the brand stands for and what its purpose is and what it's trying to achieve versus being a kind of an exclusive thing. And so that's what I really try to do, is I try to work with entrepreneurs and startups to get clear on who they are and build out this brand foundation so that they have a kind of a roadmap and directions for how the brand should grow into the future.
And again, Maddie, weigh in on this one too as well, if you like. But I hear you on that one. One of my, and this notion that there's the startup with maybe, I don't know, three people, maybe named Maddie, Charlie, and Jamie, just like totally hypothetical, that we're sort of doing our thing and we're not articulating. Like, I get that concept. One of my concerns, though, is that if you raise that question with the leaders in the organization, I think their mind immediately goes to, oh, then what should our culture should be? Like, what, then we need core values about, you know, innovation and being cutting edge, or what, like, they define it in terms of what they want and not in terms of what they are. Like, mm-hmm. There's no fundamental acceptance that, you know what really, like, our superpower actually is this, and we don't really get clear on that. So do you help them, do you make that distinction between the what should we be versus who we are?
Yes, I do. And so if the brand, if the company's already existing, then I'm able to go in and kind of objectively look at what they think their superpowers are versus what their superpowers actually are, and what their customers are telling what their superpowers are as well. And so then I try to, you know, help them align to the superpowers that the customers are being attracted to versus what they think they want to be. And it's okay to, you know, to try and bridge that gap between where your superpowers are now and what you want to be. That, those are things to work towards and to achieve. But you've got to start with where you're attracting the most, where you're putting all that effort in. You want the most return on your investment before you move into the larger goals down the road.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here. I think what I really love is the word unshakable, in the sense that in the work that we do around culture, there's a definite difference between the things, what we would call defensive plays in our culture playbook, the things that you want to preserve and protect, and then the offensive plays, right? The things you want to shift potentially to be more futurist. But that idea of unshakable, there are things worth protecting, the things that brought you here, you know, and so it's not about throwing the baby out with the bathwater in terms of culture change and just, you know, completely changing who you are in order to be like the cool kids, you know?
So yeah, I really no, sense that exactly.
There's like a foundation and roots and history and an origin story that really belongs to you as a company.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the whole point, is when you build this foundation, this is what is your core. And these things will not change. They may evolve slightly over time, but that's what your brand stands for. And that's what it's trying to achieve with its vision, and its promise to its customers should never change. You may have promises for your different products or services related to those, but your overall promise should be something that you can deliver on every single time.
In that regard, I agree completely around the consistency and delivering on the promise. I think that's really important. I will say, and this is actually a question we get from clients and sometimes prospects, even when we're talking about that need to define your culture, right? That need to get really clear on who you are. One of their pushbacks, maybe the wrong word, but one of their questions is, yeah, but we're even if you only have like 50 or 100 people, like, we have subgroups, we have subcultures. Not everyone is going to, we have different locations and not everyone's going to behave in the same way. So like, we want to deliver on the promise, but does that allow for kind of flexibility and some different interpretations? I mean, what's been your experience in working with folks around that issue of, I want some variety, I want some diversity in how we live this culture?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you can have flexibility within how you choose to live out the values and the guiding principles, the things that that set your brand apart from everyone else. But I think, you know, you also want to try to infuse like your values and your mission and your vision and your guiding principles into every aspect of the organization so that it kind of just feels natural for the employees, no matter where they are in the world, to kind of work within that same thing. I don't think everyone is going to do everything exactly the same way because we're human. But you know, I think it should all be, you know, as similar as possible. Like, so for example, when you visit a Starbucks, you know, if you go to a Starbucks in Chicago versus one in Washington, D.C. versus one in Japan, you should have a very similar, if not the same, experience.
Agreed. I think that's important.
So I wanted to actually jump back a little bit to the idea of superpowers, because I know this is something that Jamie and I were just talking about recently. As a concept that is, of course, related to culture and brand, right? It's like the thing that you're known for. But it also potentially has, like, actual superpowers can have a dark side, a shadow side. Like, if you're too much of that thing, then it might stop you from seeing opportunities in other areas or something like that. Do you have any thoughts about the concept of superpower as being part of your brand identity as an organization?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I think, you know, you can feel like if you choose a niche, you can feel like you get typecasted sometimes and you're kind of stuck in that one area, and you may want to, you know, move on to another area, but don't know how to do that. And so I think that's where, you know, you can feel stuck, but I think the way to kind of combat that is to always kind of be looking to the future and to other areas while you maintain your core niche you're offering. And so I think that just having, you know, conversations around new ideas and innovation and always kind of having that on the side can help you feel less stuck and kind of give you opportunities for other things to explore.
Well, and it goes right back to the idea of the whole unshakable idea, right? Like there's things that are rooting you to what you're truly all about, but that doesn't mean you can't be testing and experimenting and innovating and trying new things at the same time. And in fact, you can probably experiment more and better if you're rooted in that way.
Right, exactly. And with like your vision and your, you know, just taking your vision, it's a very broad statement. And so there's lots of different definitions that can be pulled or that can be aligned to that vision. So you can definitely go in other areas and explore and still tie back to that overall vision that the brand is trying to achieve. So yeah, you're exactly right.
I got to think though that process, if you're going to become unshakable and flexible at the same time, which is what we're talking about, right? Like that requires the ability, I think, to have repeated and clear and challenging conversations on a regular basis about that. Like if you, right, so this is a question maybe about are you seeing in terms of your unshakable brands, are you seeing that capacity to speak the truth to each other, to handle those tough conversations? Because if you don't, right, I mean, I can envision very quickly this scenario where we're like, we create the unshakable brand and we are this and we are all about integrity. Oh, I'm not even going to mention any actual brands, just for example, like Wells Fargo. I don't even know why I said that. That where the CEO apparently believed that it was a bunch of bad apples that took their brand sort of down that path of we create, nine, you know, whatever million number of fake accounts it was. So this is a bit, I don't know, I'm a conflict resolution guy, so I'm always assuming that if we could have our conflict better, it would get better. But is that a piece of this, the ability to have those tough conversations quickly in order to navigate that unshakable versus flexible boundary?
Oh, yes, completely. And you know, that's why, you know, I always say that the foundational statements are not just marketing fluff, or things that sound good to a customer, but these are statements that you can actually go in and check against, almost like a litmus test. And you know, that can be a tool used in the boardroom to say, you know, are we on track? Are we actually delivering on our promise, or are we failing at it? And how do we need to adjust our operations in order to meet that promise? Yeah, so I completely agree that having those hard conversations and having them often is critical in order to maintain the performance and the unshakableness of your brand.
Yeah, and again, I literally was talking to someone just yesterday about a very large, popular brand that I won't name because this is not from the news, but their challenge is like he could sort of go for, they're sort of nationwide, but he could go from location to location and tell me like one after another, like, yeah, that's the good culture location, that's the bad culture location. Like, and everybody in the system sort of knows it. And I feel like, again, I'm reading more into this situation because I don't know anything about this large organization, but I feel like they're not confronting the difference. This is my story, that they're kind of glossing over it. And I feel like if that's how you do it, if you can't have those hard conversations, then I think it's going to end up backfiring.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I've been with large multinational corporations before where they've tried to roll out initiatives, but it's only kind of surface level. And so, like, for example, I was excited about the initiative, but my boss and my boss's boss weren't excited about the initiative. Therefore, they squashed it within our office. So, you know, it was kind of reaching other offices, but not the location I was in. And so, therefore, my employee experience was different, and the culture of that office was different versus the other. And you have all this misalignment, and then it turns into miscommunication, and then you have different experiences, and now your brand is just kind of different in every location that you're in, which doesn't bode well for trying to create a consistent experience.
So one of the things that we focus on a lot, which I'm sure you do too, is the vocabulary and language of culture. So how you describe, you know, what it's like to work somewhere. And that's obviously a big piece of everything we're talking about, right? The ability, and maybe this speaks to the different subcultures, even good or bad cultures within one organization, especially the really large ones. But if it seems to me that if you really had the right amount of descriptive language to really authentically describe yourself, then you could own some of those things that are different, you know, even within one organization. So part of the challenge, and I think one of the things that we're really focused on, is building that vocabulary to describe culture.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think language is so critical because it automatically builds visions in your mind about, you know, either you're going to perceive something as good or bad or relating to you or not relating to you. And so you'll immediately either want to move forward or stop completely interacting with a brand or whatever situation you're in. And I think language is really critical as far as the brand and the culture. And some examples that I love, kind of from like the brand level, that kind of immerses the customers, but also the employees into the brand or the branded world, are Starbucks and how, being a Seattle native, I grew up with Starbucks. And when they started naming their cup sizes and then their drinks, and everyone was kind of like, well, what is this? This feels like a foreign language. But over time, it became, you know, part of Starbucks's culture. And other coffee shops can't really compete with those same names, because Starbucks has, you know, branded those names and turned them into products and infused them into their culture. And I think another great example is Disney. And if you're at like the theme park, they'll call all of their they're maintenance workers, or they're like Mickey Mouse and all those characters, cast members. And when they're in the Disney park itself with all the customers, they will be on stage. And as soon as they leave the park, they will be off stage. Mm-hmm. And so just infusing their employees, their cast members with that, those types of words and that language kind of immerses them into the world of Walt Disney or the world of Starbucks and how the brands think in order to you know, create what they're creating. And so I think if the employees can be immersed into that and kind of get on board and believe in it, then they can start to project that to the customers and create that that better brand experience, but also they get to amplify and personify the culture even more.
So we're running close to our 20-25 minute mark, but I want to ask one more question and make a couple more comments, particularly in the brand language. One of my favorite quotes in the business world, which I'll probably get a little bit wrong, is from D. Hock, who founded Visa, which was, "Language is not primarily the means by which we communicate, it's the means by which we think." Right? Like the words we choose end up influencing how we think about things. And I think that's what you were sort of getting at. Like that, that notion of cast member and the notion of using Italian words to describe the size of the coffee, like they could have said medium, you know, or right. Well, and don't get me started that grande is their medium and that actually is large. But I get it. But they could have, like, it would have been fine, but it was intentional. And probably a lot of people don't realize that that has an influence on how they think about the experience there. And I think the same is true with Disney. But shadow side is the wrong word, but I guess my question around this is, I know some people, and it may or may not be some people on this call whose name rhymes with Maddie, like refuse to say grande. Like they're like, I want a medium coffee. And it's not just me. But like there are people who sort of push back. And this gets back to, or not back to, but to the, that question of, you fundamentally don't control your brand, right? The customer does, right? Like, I mean, they're the ones that define ultimately the experience because it's their experience. And so any sort of, I think there's an element that's true on culture too, is that like you don't get to sort of command what your culture is. It's what your people experience. So how do you manage that either both from a brand or a culture point of view that you're not totally in control?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, it's a big question. And you can't really control your customers or what they're going to say or how they're going to order. But all you can do is, you know, kind of influence them to or invite them to use the language that you're presenting to them. Mm-hmm. To kind of get them thinking in the mind of or the mindset of how your brand acts and the why it uses the language that it uses. And if they find that experience enjoyable, then they're more likely to use that language. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of through positive influence and through, you know, just kind of creating this immersive experience, you can kind of get them to go along with it, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's all down to authenticity, right? If your language reflects the truth, and you know, maybe the positive truth, of course, because that's sort of human nature, but it's still authentic, then it will stick much more and it will attract the people who it should attract. Mm-hmm. Right?
And yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can pretty quickly tell when a brand is kind of being inauthentic with some of the language it uses. You know, it may have like a great marketing copy on their website, but then when you go speak to someone at the company, it's completely different and you're like, wait a minute, like this isn't adding up. So yeah, I think authenticity is very important.
So cool. So I think we're pretty much out of time. I told you this was going to take, you were going to be surprised at how short this is. But we're about done. So Benjamin, thanks so much for joining us. This is a cool conversation. I appreciate it. And we're going to hopefully give you an opportunity to maybe do some follow-up posts on our blog. That's a kind of a Maddie job, but we love to offer folks opportunities to do that. So Thanks everyone for joining us today on the Culture Chat podcast. If you found out about our podcast on the blog, be sure to go sign up on iTunes and vice versa and tell your friends, because we enjoy sharing this stuff with everybody. And until next time, thanks for coming, and we'll see you again on another edition of the Culture Chat podcast.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And that was the Culture Chat today. We'll have some highlights up on the blog soon. Find out more about WorkXO and how to map your workplace genome at workxo.com.